We South Africans have a love-hate relationship with the rand. It represents our hopes and fears as it rises and falls. So too does the national mood, it seems, with the swings in our currency. It's our collective share price on SA Inc. It was born on the 14th of February 1961, and the rand has gone from global pariah to emerging market proxy. The rand has emerged as an unlikely winner among emerging market currencies since the COVID-19 pandemic has swept across the globe. Despite South Africa's high levels of debt and our unemployment problems, US sanctions have rumbled Russian bond markets, Turkish assets have been hit by monetary policy concerns, and other big developing countries like India and Brazil have taken a hard hit from the coronavirus crisis. And the rand has been trading very, very well, like a safe haven almost, within the high yield part of the index. And the South African currency has strengthened just under 2.5% this year and soared in the last 12 months, while an index of emerging market currencies was down about 2%. And rand-denominated government bonds have delivered handsome returns despite this year's hefty rise in US Treasury yields, which roiled other emerging markets as well. South Africa offers some of the highest real yields in major emerging markets, with 10-year government bonds yielding just more than 9%, with inflation at 3.2% year on year. But they don't call the rand the rattler in FX markets for nothing, as it can quickly turn around and bite you. So what's behind the rand strength that we've seen, and where to from here for our beloved rattler? Let's welcome our panel to find out. Brian Cantor, head of the Research Institute at Investec Wealth and Investment, Nolan Vapanar, co-chief investment officer at Anchor Capital, and Varushka Singh, fixed income and currency strategist at RMB. Brian, South Africa now appears to be a far cry from its time amongst the so-called Fragile Five, which is that group of countries that was roiled by the 2013 taper tantrum due to their reliance on foreign capital to plug funding deficits. If we just look at where we are now, does it surprise you the current bout of rand strength?
I think one must get away from the notion that there's some kind of mysterious force that acts on the exchange value of the rand. In fact, there's something that's very highly consistent in its behavior over many years now. Actually, you can go back to 1995, as I just did, and you can see how strong the relationship is between the dollar-rand exchange rate, or rather the, if you like, the other way around, the rand-dollar exchange rate, and EM currencies in general. So what happens to the rand is almost one-to-one explained by what is happening to EM exchange rates generally. That relationship is highly mean reverting. Yes, sometimes you get movements away, but then it comes back. Now, you get movements away from one-to-one when, in fact, there's something South African-specific going on, as, for example, December 2015. There you see rand weakening against other EM currencies. But in general, it's one-to-one. Now, COVID hurt the rand a little bit more than it did other EM currencies. And I think lately the rand has come back in line. It's very much in line with the average EM exchange rate. So then you've got to ask a further question. What drives EM exchange rates and hence the rand? And the answer to that is quite clearly, again, the dollar. If you look at the exchange rate of the dollar versus the euro and the yen, etc., the major currencies, you will find the explanation. Dollar strength, EM weakness, rand weakness. Dollar weakness against the peer currencies, it goes reverse. Then EM currencies strengthen, and the rand tends to strengthen with it. So it's really got not all that much to do with what we do here in South Africa. It has a great deal to do with what's happening globally, what's happening to the dollar, and what's happening to capital flows to and from the U.S. and to some degree away from EM. So no mystery, and the current recent behavior of the rand, it got a bit of relative strength in March and early April, and now I think it's pretty much back in line where you would expect it to be, observing the EM exchange rates.
There was a very interesting chart that you shared with me in terms of that correlation with other EM exchange rates going back several years. The same is true with other commodity producing currencies like the Aussie dollar as well. Very clear correlation there. Varushka, I just want to shift over to you. And, you know, Brian touched on those issues that can be own goals or self-inflicted. 2015, December, Nene Gate, we saw what the Rand did then. Since then, and through COVID, the Rand did weaken for a period, but has subsequently tracked back to the emerging market base. Why is that? Do you think our situation is just slightly better than many pessimists had thought from a macro and a fiscal perspective?
Last year, with COVID, we also have to remember that we were downgraded to junk, and that was a double whammy on the currency, particularly the Rand, as an EM complex. And to Brian's point, the Rand has reacted or aligned in a way as an EM currency. We also have to remember that it's a commodity currency. And given what has happened with commodity prices alongside improvement in exports, that's testament to recovery in the global environment, and that has helped the Rand steer stronger. We tend to look at, in our modeling, a fair value that includes industrial metals alongside the SA-US inflation differential. And we know that inflation has aligned to below the target band. On top of that, commodity prices have helped prop the currency. So our fair value is actually sitting around 14, and just looking at the real effective exchange rate, you know, just touching on what the trade implies, the Rand is undervalued relative to its long-term average taken from January 2000, and it's sitting below that average by about 10%. So, I mean, should we see commodity prices continue to be elevated, as well as exports continue to improve and progress, that will lend support to the currency, not only as an EM complex, but as well as a commodity currency. Aligning to what Brian had touched on, the more we see the dollar steer, that will also be a driver of what happens to the currency, and also possibly restrict any further gains that is noted over the course of this year.
And I think that the DXY index has been the big surprise. We saw towards the end of last year, with a change in political power in the US, many had started to pencil in a bit more dollar weakness. But surprisingly, the dollar did strengthen into this year. And we'll come to that point. Nolan, just as an introductory comment on the Rand at the moment, would you say that the Rand is more fairly valued or undervalued, to Varushka's point?
Judging the value of the Rand is obviously a little bit subjective. Anka for a while has been saying that the fair value of the Rand is somewhere between 14.50 and 15. In our models, which are generally purchasing power parity based, so inflation rate differential based, we tend to come out with that as a central point for the Rand. Looking at the current environment, as Varushka has said, there are some very specific factors domestically, the benefit from the commodity cycle, and then globally, the weak dollar up until about December, and as you say, it's almost like the dollar weakness paused during Q1, though we do think that that may well gain momentum again, and you know it's very plausible to see the Rand trade with a 13 handle at some time in the future. But our long-term fair value continues to be in this 14.50 to 15 range.
Coming back to that point, Brian, on where the dollar is heading right now, has this current bout of dollar strengthening into the first quarter, when everyone was talking about potential dollar weakness, surprised you? What's underpinning this this dollar strength at the moment?
Well, I would say it's a little dollar strength. Nothing material. Nothing of the kind that really does move the Rand and the EM. So it's modest dollar strength. Remember, the US economy is is doing extraordinarily well. I mean, its U.S. incomes are in fact ahead of where, that is household incomes, ahead of where they would have been without COVID. So the American economy is leading the world in its pace of recovery. That normally is good for capital flows to the U.S. So the stronger the U.S. economy does, the better U.S. businesses do, the better the expected return, so it attracts capital to the U.S. and it tends to give you some dollar strength. The concern about the U.S. is really about how well will they fund the extra spending that they're intending to do. This Democratic administration has very ambitious spending plans. And the question is, how is it going to fund that? I mean, will they be able to raise taxes in line with this extra spending so as to avoid the normal inflationary pressures you get when fiscal deficits widen and when resort to money creation becomes more likely? So I think that's very much the issue. And the better one expects the U.S. economy to fund its deficits, I think this, in a way, the stronger the dollar. But any indication of a reluctance to actually face up to the tax implications of these spending programs, or in turn a willingness to moderate some of those spending programs, will raise questions about the long-run trend in the dollar.
And one worries, Brian, about the impact of these tax increases, you know, hiking corporate taxes, increasing capital gains taxes. What the impact that might have on growth, on future and expected growth in the U.S.?
Well, you've got two forces here. You've got the spending programs, which other things equal are good for growth, and then you've got the tax proposals. Now you've got to find a balance. I don't think there's any short-term concern about the pace of the U.S. economy's recovery. It will continue very, very strongly. And there's a lot of, as we know, a lot of pent-up demand in the form of bank deposits at record levels. Well, yes, maybe record levels, but certainly the growth in household saving is way above trend. And most of that saving is in the form of deposits. So there's going to be no lack of spending. The question then again is, how much more spending, how much more stimulus is one going to get from these programs of the new administration? So, yeah, how well will the U.S. manage its affairs? Now we would look to the bond markets in the U.S. to really give us some warning signals. So far, I would say so good. There doesn't seem to be any real concern about inflation picking up permanent momentum. Yes, temporary momentum, but not permanent as yet.
Yep.
But the issue is still, you know, an open one.
Another big component of this, Brian, is commodities. And if you look at our positive trade balance surprise, it's sometimes not a positive indicator because it can also mean there's just a lack of demand in the local economy and you're importing less, but you're just exporting the same amount. In this case, it really doesn't look to be the case because our commodity exports have been soaring. We see that in the tax receipts. Even blueberries, some agricultural exports are absolutely shooting the lights out. It's a big story, this.
Yes, it's a great story. I mean, it again reflects strong global demands and perhaps some supply constraints. It's very good for South Africa incomes, more than it is for output. So GDP, which is a volume measure, is not going to show much. Because, in fact, the volume of exports adjusted for prices is not going to increase. But what is increasing very rapidly are South African incomes. And if you do the nominal story, the GDP in nominal terms is very likely to be accelerating. So GDP growth in nominal terms, not necessarily in real terms, will be picking up the impact of these higher prices and the higher incomes being earned in the mining sector. Now that is helpful because it means that your GDP to debt ratio may well start to show an unexpected improvement. And if that happens, then the threat of your debt trap, the ratio of government debt to GDP is a closely watched indicator. And if that shows surprising improvement, then the risk profile of South Africa then improves. So that might be the trigger to actually bring lower long-term interest rates for South Africa. Mm. That would be very helpful. Mm. As you mentioned,
cost of
capital. Our long-term interest rates are very, very high and very discouraging of capital expenditure. So if we could get the risk premiums down, the interest rates down, and the cost of capital down, that would be very helpful for the growth prospects of the South African economy. So that's, I think, where the commodity boom, price boom, certainly makes a difference. I'm not sure it makes all that much difference to the rand, dominated as it will be by EM, and dominated in turn by the dollar, but it certainly makes a difference to South African incomes and debt ratios.
Varushka, what's your take on the commodities super cycle and the support that it is lending to the currency at this stage?
I'm just going to go a bit back to the question around the trade, and I know that you initially posed the question around the Fragile Five. Mm. We saw the balance on the current account turn positive in 2020. And the trade slowed last year, as we've spoken about, due to lockdown as a result of imports and exports slowing. And the subsequent improvement, as Brian has alluded to, is a testament around the strength of the global economy. So we would expect the current account to remain in surplus for the rest of 2021. We would expect the current account to then return to deficit next year as that trade balance narrows and the balance on your services, income, and transfers account normalizes as well. In terms of how this impacts the rand, it would be negative for the currency, barring what would happen globally, but this is more over a longer term. When we look at our models, we tend to look at also the growth differential, etc. Those are fundamental factors that affect the rand over a longer term. So in other words, we wouldn't necessarily see the rand spike to a weaker level should the current account return to deficit and us as South Africa return to a twin deficit country, but rather over a longer period of time that would impact the rand and make it a bit more vulnerable should there be any shocks. Looking at last year, we had a lot of event risk. If we have to look at more technical levels, such as looking at your implied volatilities, etc., there isn't much that's being priced in over in terms of event risk the way we had last year. So the rand is less vulnerable, and within the EM complex, it's a lot more sturdy in that regard when we look at this event risk.
So, speaking of risk, and Nolan, to bring you in on this point, I think government has been relative to our emerging market peers. If you look at what's going on in Brazil, India, South African government has been really praised for handling the coronavirus pandemic quite well. If we forget about some of the silly regulations last year where you couldn't buy crop bottom pants and roast chicken from Woolies. But on the fiscal side, there does still seem to be some implementation risk. Can Treasury, for example, deliver on the much-needed consolidation of the budget? And we see the wage talks at a public sector level now entering into a deadlock. So this seems to be one of the key risks on the fiscal side.
Michael, we are actually positive on the fiscal side. I mean, to take a step back, though, yes, we'd agree that overall, the government handled the COVID crisis and the lockdowns and everything else relatively well. Nobody got a perfect scorecard. I think we've seen blunders throughout the world, and I'd rather be in South Africa than many other states. We didn't run out of hospital space. It came tight in places, but we did okay. In terms of the fiscal side, this was a bit of a catalyst for the government to actually sort of realize that it needs to bring its fiscal balance back under control. And we've seen a very strong message from government that they intend to do that going forward. So very much the budget is a pro-growth budget. We even saw strong messaging for a potential corporate tax cut next year. And at the same time, it's about reining in expenditure. If you look back at the South African government 3-4 years ago, it was unthinkable that the government would go up against labor unions and say, look, we're not in a position to give you a wage hike. At the moment, it looks like the government's standing firm. They're very, very strong in their messaging of, you know, the cupboard is bare, there is no more money available, and we need to right-size our wage bill. I think that is actually very positive for the long run in the country, but obviously less wages is, in the short term, less consumer spending. We continue to see that sort of strong messaging when the government talks about restructuring of land bank, where the finance minister has made it very clear that the government isn't prepared to, you know, write guarantees that effectively, in his words, are deferred equity. In other words, he writes a guarantee knowing that land bank's going to call on it in a year or two. He's taken the stance that land bank needs to be properly restructured to be sustainable, and government's willing to play its part, but ultimately it needs to be, you know, a restructuring in conjunction with the lenders. So across the board, the strong expenditure ceiling, for lack of a better phrase, is a theme, and we are seeing the benefits of that, firstly in terms of lower and lower expected debt ceilings. Brian was talking about the debt to GDP ratio, and South Africa's debt to GDP ratio is eye-wateringly high. It's going to peak a little bit higher, but to the extent that the government can use this commodity boom to bring it down and to turn the tide so that the direction is downwards, that is phenomenally positive. A lot of South Africa's challenges are the risk premium associated with living in an emerging market, and it's about managing that risk premium down. That addresses the cost of capital. That actually has potentially very significant benefits for the rand, and we're seeing the right actions from government, albeit it's got a delayed impact. So we're quite positive on the long-term trajectory as long as the commodity boom continues to be a sort of tailwind for government efforts.
And we could do a little bit more in terms of supporting the mining environment and creating a bit more of an enabling framework. I think there are levers within government's control when it comes to the MPRDA. We see the Minerals Council taking the department to court again on this issue. I just want to shift over to what the sovereign risk credit default swap spreads are telling us, Brian, about the risk story and narrative around South Africa at the moment.
Yes, well, I think those indicators are all important. I think the interest rate story, the cost of capital story, is the important one. We haven't seen as yet any movement, favorable movement in long-term interest rates. We have seen some improvement in the sovereign risk spread, 30 or 40 basis points, is now around, let's say, around 200 basis points, 2% risk premium. That's how Africa pays for dollars over 5 years. It's still expensive capital. So I don't think we should overcomplicate the rand story. That's the global EM story. The South African story is around as pointed out, around the fiscal issues. Can we live within our means? Can we fund our expenditure without to resort to money creation? Will we stay out of the debt trap? A lot of bad news is baked into our interest rate spreads. Just to give you an example, the gap between 10-year money in South Africa and 10-year money in the U.S. is an order of 8% per annum. That is, over 10 years, the rand, if you do the interest parity calculation, the rand is expected to weaken by about 8% a year, compounding over 10 years. That's how negative, in a way, the sentiment is. And we can hope to turn that around. You mentioned the mining charter. We discussed earlier the point that the benefits of higher commodity prices are on current revenues. We're not going to see new mines established in South Africa to increase our output of minerals unless we can get some certainty out of the mining charter.
Right. Brian, we've got to end it there. We've run out of time. And for all of those reasons that you've just listed that are supportive of the strong currency, hopefully we'll see an improving national mood as well.